You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 28th of November 2015 on Monocle 24. The men's magazine market is in the spotlight this week. A number of famous names are set to publish their last ever issues by the end of the year, whether it's Upmarket Details, Lads Mags Zoo and FHM, or Brazilian Playboy. We'll look at this volatile market and ask, is it the right time for them to go? And we'll find out why those that remain still have the recipe for success. It's a man's world on this week's edition of The Stack. On today's show, we look at the state of the men's magazine market. It's been a tough run for a number of former staples. Glossy Details magazine from Condé Nast is due to publish its last edition in December. Other titles like Zoo and FHM are also due to publish their final issues by the end of the year. So is it all gloom and doom? Ian Birch, consultant and former Hearst head of development, will join the discussion. We'll also speak with the editor of a beautiful magazine, a bit of a favourite here at Midori House, all about dogs, Four and Sons.
It starts maybe with a magazine, but it is about a whole combination of culture-related ways of outputting beautiful things to kind of connect with an audience.
All that ahead on this week's edition of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. Hello and welcome to The Stack. Today we're looking at the state of the nation when it comes to men's magazines. Joining us is the consultant, former Hearst head of development, Ian Birch. Ian, welcome back to The Stack. Great to have you with us, as always. And we are talking, I mean, we don't like to focus on bad news stories for print really on Stack, but it's the marking of a sort of an end of an era. A number of titles that are, well, reaching the end of the line. Maybe just the overview, first of all. Do you think it is the end of an era for, what would you call it, men's magazines? Or is it sort of too early to talk about that?
No, I do, actually. I think it's a bit of a changing of the guard. I think what's happening is that those brands that were around from the 90s into the noughties are basically coming to an end. And there's a new wave of brands coming up. So I do think, if you like, the tectonic plates are shifting. Mm. And I think there are various reasons for that. It's not just the magazine itself. It's the big society out there at the same time. I think there are lots of different elements feeding into this. So I don't think we should be too simplistic here and just talk about the magazine itself. I mean, obviously, the quality of the magazine is hugely important. But I think we need to look at it in the bigger picture.
Yeah, it's interesting you make that point about quality, because there's a couple of titles which I mentioned in the introduction, which we have here, or, you know, late editions, Zoo here in Britain, for example, which the lack of quality screams off every page, if you will. Is it a question to a degree that that's just simply not good enough and that's why it's dying? Or is it more complicated for some of these titles?
Yeah, I think coming back to the bigger point again, I think it's kind of, you know, I think it's a combination of things. So I think we all know that the print industry is under a huge amount of pressure, and particularly the more traditional print industry, the big veteran publishers, because they simply don't have the kind of business model that can operate today in the way that it used to operate 10, 15 years ago. So it's really created this climate of what I would call draconian cost cutting. Mm. And it's kind of depressing, if I'm being really honest, working in one of those big companies, you know, like a Hearst or a Condé Nast or whatever. I don't mean to say it's totally depressing, but it's kind of quite
depressing
tough.
Areas, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I think as a result of this cost cutting, I think creativity is suffering. I speak very broadly here. Mm. So again, I'm really oversimplifying, but I think a lot of that creativity is now moving into the independent sector. Mm. So what I see in the newsstand around the corner from here, unbelievable range of independent publishers. Now, obviously, you know this with Monocle and many other, but it is amazing the creativity that's kind of springing up there at the moment. And I think it's a very simple business problem here too, because the digital revenues are simply not replacing those that had been generated previously by print. Mm. They're simply not filling that gap. So while they're waiting for that to happen, they're having to cost cut like mad within the company, which means a lot of people are being let go at a frankly furious pace, which is kind of depressing for everyone, and starts a climate of fear, of insecurity, of hanging on to your place on the life raft, that kind of thing. And I think the other big thing is, particularly where the more traditional men's magazines are, like FHM and, as you mentioned, Zoo, men have basically gone online. There's no big surprise here. If what you're after is porn, you're going to get it fast, cheap and easy online. And also men are obviously going on social and mobile much more than they're going to print. So those are the two really big drivers here where men's magazines are concerned. And hence, I think that's the real reason why brands like FHM and Zoo have sadly folded, because you may not like the titles. I personally think FHM at its prime was a great magazine. I'm not going to comment on Zoo. I'm sorry.
That's very diplomatic of you.
I'm not going to go there. But I kind of think it's sad when any brand goes, you know, because there's no point in gloating, you know.
That's no, absolutely.
Not very...
Well, no, and we're seeing the demise of other titles that I think have a more of a luster about their reputation. I'm thinking of Details magazine, for example, which will definitely be a big miss. And that's rather an interesting one, because the journey that title went on itself through the kind of peak of the Lads Mag era during sort of 1990s is in itself interesting, and that story, that biography, if you like, is rather compelling. And I know you know some of the characters who were sort of in amongst it during that period.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I really thought Details was a groundbreaking magazine, and I think it probably was up until the last issue this month. I mean, a quick history of it. It was founded in 1982 by a somewhat maverick fashion editor called Annie Flanders. It was very, very downtown New York, and it sort of grew out of a defunct magazine called the Soho Weekly News. So already you can imagine what it was like. It was very cutting edge. It was very downtown and a lot of fun, you know, and very much respected by the fashion industry, because almost from the first issue, they got a lot of fashion advertising. So anyway, cut to 1988, Condé Nast, the big guys, came along and decided they wanted to buy this downtown magazine. And they paid an extraordinary $2 million. Now, back in 1988, that's a lot of money.
That's a big figure, isn't it? Yeah.
And not only that, but it was for a magazine that had a circulation of just 100,000, which in America is not that big a circulation, even for a kind of East Coast-based magazine. But they saw something in it, and they were right. They were absolutely right, because things were changing. The way people saw fashion and style was changing around that time. So I got to, there was a guy called James Truman who came in around this time to edit it. Now, I think James is kind of a bit of a magazine genius, actually. I mean, he's a bit polarizing. I sit on the side of, I think he's a really talented guy. And he is, I have to admit, he is a friend as well. But putting that to one side, he's a very enigmatic guy and very talented. So he came in and he really changed the magazine
You've brought a couple of sort of, you've raided your personal archive, I think, to get a few. Just describe, if you can, you've got a couple of editions. Describe the sort of the evolution then during this period.
Yeah, well, his first issue, and maybe you could Google it online, was, I think, September 1990, which kind of really announced it in terms of colour and the kind of content on the cover. So it says, "Say It Loud, Music, Comics, Sex." And in many ways, those were the kind of core elements and the kind of voice of the magazine going forward. But the other interesting thing was the mix of features, which I think got more and more interesting and in a way more and more esoteric. So on his first cover, he had the Noriega cover-up, What Happened to the Truth, and then a piece about people who go rock climbing. So already you can see a kind of different mix here going on, which is very interesting. And then fast forward to April the following year, you can see the beginning of what became the template that is Details. So a sort of moody shot of REM on the cover, Lenny Kravitz, and also quite a strong flavour of fashion. So what he did was he upped the circulation from about 100,000 to about 450,000, which is pretty good going, actually. Even, you know, remember he had the power of Condé Nast behind him, which always helps. I think what's interesting about James is I was doing some research on him before I arrived, and there was a brilliant piece about him in the LA Times in about 1988. And the writer came up with this great phrase, which I think absolutely sums up both James and the magazine. And I quote, he nimbly moves between uptown and downtown, grit and glamour. That's exactly what this magazine is, in a nutshell.
Ian, let me ask you then, is there a case, because if we look towards, say, the women's magazine sector, you know, it's much more, it's about fashion and style. And magazines that haven't changed with every season, they stuck to their guns and they remain as potent editorial forces as ever. Did some of the men's titles kind of back the wrong horse by going for sexy stories, that kind of thing, getting into that kind of soft-ish porn territory? Did they back the wrong horse? We're going to talk later about some of the magazines that are still going strong. It's more about fashion, it's more about style. Is it kind of a question of backing the wrong horse editorially, or is that again an oversimplification?
No, I think it's about two things. I think it's about quality. So I think when FHM was great, it was a really good magazine. It was brilliantly crafted. And it had its, if you like, its imperial phase in the 90s when people like Ed Needham, Antonin Noguera, Grub Smith and so on were involved in it. And they had a tagline which was, I think it was funny, sexy, useful. And those were the three brand values that drove everything. Now, it was very clever. It was very well put together. And if you like, the kind of semi-naked, quote-unquote, babes were almost an extra rather than a core thing. But because it took off and became such a giant success, and literally it was minting money for a period, I think a lot of people wanted to jump on that train. Mm. And unfortunately, they didn't have the same talent. They saw that babes, quote unquote, on the cover sold a lot of copies.
And forgetting that there was quite a lot of wit and intelligence that went into it as well.
And it was, so I think it's both around the content and the quality, as you said, the wit and the intelligence. But I also think, you know, we all know about the era of the lads, you know, back in the 90s, the kind of music, the kind of lifestyle and everything, that came to an end. And I think that, you know, those kind of magazines just don't fit anymore. Mm. You know, people just aren't like that anymore. The world has moved on.
The insights of Ian Birch, we're going to be hearing more from Ian, and we'll actually look to the, yeah, that end of the spectrum where people are investing in and doing the job properly a little later here on the programme.
Monocle's unrivaled network of editors and correspondents around the world bring you a brilliant new collection of books, the Monocle Travel Guides. And the series kicks off with London and with New York City. New York used to be such an easy city to crack for the visitor, but now its focus has fractured and shifted. Why not let Monocle help you to navigate it?
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Monocle has had a bureau in New York since its launch in 2007, and our travel guide is a celebration of all that we know and love about this place. We put together a list of the finest places and experiences the Big Apple has to offer, be it a cozy stay at the Cosby Street Hotel, a late drink in a classic bar like King Cole in Midtown, or a top-notch fuss-free trim at Cheez In Brooklyn. Let us take you beyond the obvious to reveal the hidden spots New York has to offer. Published by Gestalten, these books are for people who want to get the most out of their stay, however short, and feel like locals rather than tourists. So pick up the Monocle Travel Guide to New York in Monocle shops, at monocle.com, and in all good bookstores. The Monocle Travel Guides. Cities are fun. Let's explore.
You're listening to The Stack on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. More from Ian, as promised, a little later. First, something slightly different. It's probably safe to say that dog people are something of a breed all their own. See what I've done there. But we dismiss canine culture at your peril. Four and Sons is a magazine which taps into some of the cultural intrigue surrounding our four-legged friends. Shining a light on interesting people and their dogs, the publication blends the worlds of art, music, literature, and apparently even maths, don't ask, to create some really compelling pages. Marta Rocca is creative director of Four and Sons. She popped into Midori House for a chat with Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco.
Four and Sons is a biannual magazine, and it's the space where dogs and culture collide. That's kind of how we've been describing the merge. You know, we cover art and fashion and photography, but it's always with dog as the muse of the content. So that's how we approach our content. It has to bring into the table any way of thinking about dogs or a way to presenting dogs or people that exploring dogs as metaphors for many other things in life. That's what we get excited about.
What was your favorite story, your favorite photo shoots? Because, you know, I believe some of those must be quite fun to see and to watch.
Well, every time we do a photo shoot in studio, it's fun because as the day goes in and obviously the dogs leave a smell, and then the day gets crazier and crazier because they keep kind of there in the studio and they cannot see another dog, but they can sense the dog. So that's always fun. I unfortunately cannot be at all the photo shoots because a lot of stuff happens, you know, in the States or somewhere else. But it is always really exciting to get surprised, basically. Like, it's always fun to get that kind of feeling of, okay, this went into a tangent. Something happened there, the dog magic happened and it got out of control, and it's fun, yeah.
You mentioned, you know, that you can't be in all photo shoots because actually the magazine is quite international and it feels like you're from Barcelona, but I believe you're based in Australia as
Correct.
Well. So you tried to make the magazine very international as well, not kind of just an Australia-based publication.
Exactly. Our contributor list is from all over the world. We love the idea that we can explore things that are happening simultaneously in like the States or in Germany or in Barcelona or in Australia. And I mean, there's a lot of things that are very common to all of these countries, and we talk to artists from everywhere. But again, it brings another layer of interest.
I have to say, I have the privilege to hold a copy of your new issue, which is not out yet, but will be quite soon.
Very soon.
It's the issue 4 here, Autumn Winter 2015. The cover is beautiful again. I mean, your covers are always very much impressive. And those dogs are huge. Can you tell us a bit more about the cover?
They're Irish wolfhounds. They are huge. And they're like this fantastic, it's almost, I kind of think about these dogs almost like unicorns. They're like almost like mythical creatures because they're not a breed that you see a lot. The photographer, Truls Bakken, he's a Norwegian photographer, and he has this fascination with Irish wolfhounds and other big breeds. So there's a whole series in this issue about people being shot with Irish wolfhounds. And Truls always talks about that, for how big a breed they are, that they bring a sense of tranquility in him, which is a very beautiful way of describing a bond with a breed.
You also do some projects. For example, Ali Capellino is featured in this issue as well, and I believe she's launching also a new collection.
Correct.
For dogs as well.
Yes.
And you also have the dog playing cards. Can you talk about Yes. those kind of extra things as
Yes.
well?
Yes, that's something that's been happening in the last 6 to 8 months when people is finding us a little bit easier. Basically, I think we've become a little bit the, you know, oh, we're doing something with dogs and we would like to find a partner that could fit. And both those playing cards with the Ace Hotel and the editorial with Ali Capellino are basically based on that, on like a synergy between like brands that have a connection with dogs. And so with the playing cards, what we did is we invited 25 artists to do a piece of work that would represent a breed, and then they become playing cards and it becomes a loyalty program for the Ace Hotel. And then with Ali Capellino, because they are about to launch their first canine collection, we did a photo shoot with their products that they can also be proud of and they can use for their own promotional materials.
Yeah. Are those extra projects part of your business model when you're making a magazine as well? Because here at the Stack, we're always curious as well about what goes behind, especially the indie publishing, you know.
Yes.
If you have any tips or any...
Yes. Well, it was from the start, print was always going to be like the main focus. The magazine is still the hero of our brand, to say something. But there is so many interesting things out there that are connected with the dog world that we would love to be a part of. Like, we would love to do exhibitions. We would love to do curated monographs of some of the artists that we've met along the way. We would love to do events. Yes, I think there is a lot of that is part of the indie publishing culture in general. Like, it starts maybe with a magazine, but it is about a whole combination of culture-related ways of outputting beautiful things to kind of connect with an audience.
Fernando Augusto Pacheco there chatting to Marta Roca from Four & Sons magazine. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. My guest today is Ian Birch. Ian, we were talking earlier about the demise of some titles, some which will be remembered fondly, others that maybe we're pleased to see the back of. We won't go into the detail of that. Let's talk a bit more about some of the titles that are still going strong and others you were already talking about, you know, some of the real standouts in the independent sector that are doing some of these things, particularly in the sort of men's magazines sector, very well. You've got a host to choose from. Pick out one or two. I don't know where you want to start and just talk about, I don't know, why they're still doing well, I guess, from an editorial and a commercial viewpoint.
I mean, it seems to me broadly, if you look at it overall, there's two directions at the moment, and we're waiting to see how those develop. So one is the, and I touched on this before, the new quality independent, you know, so obviously Monocle is the granddad and, you know, does that brilliantly. But there are lots of others like Dazed and Tank. I'm thinking about the men's side here, you know, Ten and Port. And then also a lot of the existing titles are doing biannuals as well. So things like The Gentleman's Journal, The Rake, Another Man, Arena on Plus, the big black book from Esquire. So that's a very healthy market. And that's, it's not huge numbers, but what it does is it really creates the perfect environment for luxury and fashion advertising. Mm-hmm. It may not offer massive scale, but it's a perfect environment. And also what a lot of those titles are doing more and more is that they're using this publishing arm as a kind of entree into the world of brand consultancy and kind of bespoke content creation. So they can really start to take off there and create lots of other revenues, which is fantastic. And then on the other side of that, you've got, if you like, the traditional broadsheets like the Financial Times, like the Telegraph and the FT, and news magazines like The Economist and The Spectator and so on. And they're also competing for this advertising because they can see, you know, that's a very useful place to be. So they offer the scale that the smaller magazines can't, but they don't really offer the premium bespoke content that the smaller magazines can. So I think that's interesting. And I think that's interesting when you look at existing magazines like, say, GQ and Esquire. So, you know, something like GQ is the big guy on the block, you know, and it's a really sophisticated, massive package. And, you know, Dylan Jones, the editor, has done a fantastic job, but it's kind of the big guy, you know, and it's all about that kind of aspirational glamour. So you are a certain kind of person if you buy Esquire. And it sort of pulls together lots of, it's almost like a mosaic of other magazines. So there's a bit of Men's Health in there. There's a bit of the magazine weekend supplements like the Times magazine and so on. There's even, I think, quite a lot of influence of Details, actually.
Yeah.
I bet you Dylan will have a huge pile of Details stacked in his office. And I mean that in the most, you know, gracious way possible. And then, kind of in contrast, that is Esquire. Now, Esquire, I have to admit here, I used to work with the editor of Esquire, so I have to declare my interests, but I'm not working with them anymore, so I'm allowed to say that. And I think Esquire is kind of, what Esquire is doing now is kind of turning into a kind of a sort of cool literary salon where a group of very good and compatible freelancers and writers all get together and write about topics that all interest them. So it's kind of evolving in that way, and it's very smart and sardonic and well-informed, but actually very warm-hearted about the whole thing and slightly, you know, slightly assertive when it needs or wants to be. So Alex Bilmes, who's the editor in the December issue, writes a very funny editor's letter. Actually, he writes the best editor's letter of any men's magazine out there. And it's all about, you know, how dad has become a bit of a pejorative adjective, you know, like dad rock and dad sandals. And he's sort of fighting back against that. And
I'm thinking, that's interesting.
That's good.
Do you think there's a point of this? You can almost sort of imagine the reader of some of the Lads Mag titles having grown up, you know, being a bit older. Is this a sector that's maybe grown up now? Is there a maturity, even about the editorial approach, that is pervading? You know, they look, it's more about style. It's more grown up. It's more considered. There are, yeah, there's a stronger editorial line on things. Has the sector just grown? It's outgrown the kind of top shelfy, smutty, ha-ha stuff, and it's just a bit more mature now.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, there will always be, perhaps less sophisticated brands, mm-hmm. you know, but not in print anymore because yeah. everyone, you know, that's all about going online. But I think absolutely, you know, the thing about mm. magazines is that, you know, they should flatter the reader in lots of ways. You know, they should look nice. They should want to put them on their coffee table in their flat or whatever. So I think these are the kind of magazines that are doing that. They're flattering in both a sort of an emotional way, but not a kind of mm. embarrassing way. But also in a way that's very useful, you know, tell me, you know, what a good wine is at a decent price that I can buy from Lidl and pretend it's something else, you know. Nothing wrong with that. No. Everybody does it. There's nothing wrong with that. If you look at December Esquire, Noel Gallagher is on the cover, and it's kind of, it's like a sort of priceless interview with Noel Gallagher because as I think it's Alex doing it, is basically, it's a bit like the Bob Geldof syndrome. You just go in, turn on the tape recorder and sit back.
Exactly.
And then he shouts at you if you interrupt. You know, you go, I was only asking a question. Yeah, well, shut up and let me finish my point. And that's kind of, it's that energy, that slight irreverence, that humour. But also they let the interview run over like 4, 5, 6 pages. So you really get a flavour of Noel Gallagher as opposed to the two most shocking quotes, which, of course, the Sun or whatever will pick up the next day. Fine. That's what happens.
Ian, just very briefly before we wrap up, you've got a couple of other titles. We've got Fantastic Man. We have A Hole and Corner. Are there any other strands, do you think? I don't know if we look at editorial direction or decision making. Is it personnel that run through some of these that help to maybe, you talked about the alchemy of getting it right. Yeah. Are there things, are there hints here that show maybe some of the secrets of that alchemy that maybe, I don't know, the next budding editor might be able to take on board and make better strategic decisions?
Well, I think a magazine like Hole and Corner is very interesting because, you know, I think what it does is, first of all, it brings together a really unique group of people. And as I said before, great magazines are always about a unique group of people who can finish each other's sentences and think laterally in a way that doesn't upset anyone. And they come up with that idea of the best idea wins. It's not who's most important or who worked longest. It's just the best idea wins. And the best idea is better because everyone kind of, you know, participates in it. So I think that's very interesting. I also think it's a very unusual take on a lifestyle, because it's very hard to do something new in lifestyle now because there are so many lifestyle magazines. But it's very much, it goes at a slower pace and it's a very, very unusual mix of features. And that's where I think it's quite similar to Details.
So there you go, content mix and quality. And if you provide the quality, people will pay.
Fingers crossed.
Who knew it was that easy, Ian?
Maybe I should launch a magazine.
Ian Birch, thanks very much, as ever, for being with us here on The Stack. That is just about all we have time for on this week's show. Thanks to Ian Birch, to our producer, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and, of course, to our sound engineer, Claire Urban. Comments or queries are welcome. Drop us a note at info@monocle.com. And don't forget to tune in next week. A special live edition of The Stack from Monocle's Christmas Market is coming your way. You can catch up with that or any of our archive programmes at monocle.com or via iTunes. You've been listening to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Until next time, it's goodbye.